Got a bunch of candles here. I'm afraid I have to change my preaching style, or I may burn up during the homily. So I got eight down here that work and one up here that's out. That's typical, you know. This gospel is very intriguing. It's got many unique features that are only found here. And they talk, once again, it talks about Christ, and it talks about how he relates to us in many different ways. Now, Jesus was in Jerusalem. He often stayed with Martha and Mary, who lived just over the hill, over the Mount of Olives. Or often, we get the impression he and his disciples sometimes stayed near the Garden of Gethsemane. We remember when he went there on the night of his Passion, they were very familiar with the place. So Jesus was at the Mount of Olives. And he passed through the Hinnom Valley, otherwise known as the Valley of Gehenna, and then came up to the Temple Mount. And on three sides, the west side was open, facing the city of Jerusalem, were a double colonnaded stoa, which is a meeting place where people would sit and talk. And it was a very attractive and inviting environment that was still relatively new that Herod had built. Rabbis would go there, and people would gather around them, and they would expound. That was one way they did it. Another would be they would walk, and people would follow them, and that they would talk. That's why they were called followers. So Jesus has arrived at the temple, as was his custom, and the Pharisees and the scribes are watching him day after day. They also come and sit in the temple. They're not getting the crowds that Jesus is. So there's some jealousy there, no doubt. They think Jesus might be a heretic. They have some reason to think this. They don't understand Jesus' teachings. They're threatened by the fact that the people think he's the Son of God. They want to do something about him. They want to fix his wagon. They want to kill him. And they bring this woman in front of him, and they want to kill her too. So Jesus is teaching. He's got a large crowd around him, which is normal for him. And here come the Pharisees and the scribes. They've got their long robes on. They're the religious leaders. And they come, all these men come with this poor woman who's been caught in sin. And she is led before them, and they hold her and they say, "Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery. What are you going to say about it? What do you say about it?" What does Jesus say about it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He just looks down and starts writing on the ground. This part I find curious because where he's sitting at the moment, it's paved. So there must have been a flower box nearby or something, you know. Some dirt on the pavement, and he's tracing in the dirt. They want to know the answer. They've got this woman. They've set the whole thing up, you see. They've got it all planned. They've got God in a box. They're going to tell him something. He's going to have to answer them. "Here's this woman. What do you think, Jesus? Didn't you hear us?" He's just writing on the ground. They ask again. So he looks up at them, finally. He says, "Let the one without sin cast the first stone." There are many different reasons why people don't answer right away. Sometimes we don't know what the right answer is. Sometimes we know that the person won't like the answer we're going to give them. Sometimes we're trying to insult somebody. I was once working at, when I worked at the airline, I had a job after the lost luggage part, which did not involve direct public contact, thanks be to God. And I really enjoyed that, except when I was removing people from airplanes that were too full. That was another interesting thing you probably haven't heard about from me yet. I worked with many different people, and you know, the whole magazine rack was in the office. And there was this one gentleman whom who did not like me, and I came to not like him very much either. I came up to his computer. I can still see this. He's working on the computer. I asked him a question. He just kept working. I thought perhaps he didn't hear me. I asked again. Staring straight ahead. The third time I asked, he smirked and said nothing. I've never been so insulted in my life as I was by that man. All my whole life. There's nothing worse than being deliberately ignored. To be insulted is one thing. At least they acknowledge your existence. This really got these Pharisees goat. They probably thought the worst of Jesus. Jesus is being God here. You know, this story is very familiar to me. How often I've asked God for something and I feel like he's tracing on the ground somewhere. You know, he doesn't answer right away. Or he's giving me a message I can't read. There's something I have to learn before Christ answers. I may not like his answer right at the moment. I may be asking the wrong question. All these things were true of the Pharisees. And Jesus often acts the same way in our case. He's listening. He heard you the first time. He's just delaying for a while. This is why it's so important to listen to the Gospels carefully. They're all stories about us, not just the woman, not just the Pharisees. We've played all these roles. Christ is not meaning to insult them, but I'm sure they took offense. You can be sure they took offense. Now, the way a stoning worked is that the person who saw the offense that was punishable by death cast the first stone. So the witness was present. Now, this sin this woman is accused of requires two people. You have a question about that? I thought you did. Where is he? He's gotten off. She's been hauled in. He's been shown mercy. They're all men. Jesus is not going to let them off the hook. He sees this double standard very clearly. It's also very interesting that it's the oldest that goes first. Because as we get older, we often, it's not that older people sin more, it's that they begin to recognize the sins of their past that they didn't realize were so harmful to themselves and others. The oldest were the wisest. They recognized themselves and they walked away. That's called conversion. And we wonder what Christ was writing on the ground. What do you think Christ was writing? Writing their sins? What was he doing? Judge not. Maybe he was writing judge not. I saw a movie once in high school for our youth group. I think it was a Cecil B. DeMille black and white movie. Some of you may have seen it. I remember this scene very well because it was done very well. And Christ would write something in Aramaic. It wasn't accurate because it looked like he was sitting on a rock in the middle of a field, which is not the case. And then it would appear, a sin would appear. And somebody's eyes would light up and they'd walk away. Then he'd aim for somebody else and write down their sin. Gossip. And off they would go, see. We don't know what he was writing. John doesn't tell us. John very deliberately doesn't tell us. He's inviting us into the gospel scene. He wants us to be there and to imagine for ourselves what Jesus is writing. John does that quite frequently. He might have been writing their names. The church fathers speculated on this at great length. Whatever he wrote, it was very effective. And finally, this woman is left alone with Jesus. And you know, Jesus is the only one, according to this argument, that could have stoned her because he's without sin. And he looks at her and he says, "Woman," he finally straightens up. See, he's been bending over all this time. Not a position we think of Jesus as being in, bent over, except for washing the feet of the disciples. He says, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She doesn't know what's going on. She can't believe it. She doesn't know what's coming next. She says, "No one. No one, sir." "Neither do I condemn you, but go and sin no more." So here we have a gospel of God's perfect mercy and his perfect justice. We often hear the one and miss the other. Jesus tells her, "Go and sin no more. You have had a great act of mercy shown you. If you get caught in this sin again and these people catch you, I will not be around to save you, not in the flesh, because the next person they're going to aim for is me, and they're going to succeed in killing me. I was innocent. You're guilty, and I'm letting you off the hook." But not to excuse the sin. Oh, no. He's giving her time. Remember last week's gospel about the fig tree? Somebody wanted to cut it down, wasn't bearing fruit. And they decided to give it another year. Fertilize it, water it, give it time. This woman was given the gift of time. Her life now consists of struggling against the sin that she was caught in. We too, when we go to confession, we had two penance services this week. We've got two next week, one at St. Vincent and one at Queen of Peace. When we go there, God shows us infinite mercy. There's never a sin that we come to that he doesn't forgive, forget, and never speaks about again. It's the greatest gift in the world. As long as we live on earth, we are living in the time of God's mercy. No matter how awful our life may be at times, we are living in the time of mercy. He always gives us more time until the last moment of our lives. And even then, as we cross the threshold of death, God gives us this last opportunity to choose him. If we reject all of those efforts on God's behalf, there's nothing left but his justice. And we can see how terrible the justice of God is by what happened to Jesus. It is to save us from that that he calls us to his mercy. And then he calls us to be merciful to others. We too, when we're confronted with someone else's sin, we don't throw the book at them. How about them? God provided a prop. Our first reaction is not to get a stone and throw it at them. It's to remember that I'm a sinner too. Let me show mercy to this person. Not to excuse their sin, but to lead them to virtue. It's so easy to throw a stone. How do we do that? Gossip. Talking badly about them, slighting them, ignoring them, condemning them. Christ does none of these things, but he challenges us to holiness. He uses love. So today's gospel, we find ourselves both as the person caught in sin, asking for God's mercy, and also sometimes as those who have found someone else in sin. In both cases, Christ calls us to compassion and also calls us to remember his justice, that we might fall into the hands of his mercy. So let us ask for the mercy of God and rejoice in his compassion.